Hey, it's your friend Mel, and welcome to the Mel Robbins Podcast. A couple weeks ago, I heard a professor from NYU say that you and I are going to spend 20 years of our life on our phone. 20 years. And when I heard him say that, it scared the hell out of me. And I wanted to figure out what I could do to change that, because I don't want 20 years to go by and I've just wasted it scrolling on social media. So I reached out to Dr. K, who is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist. He has a massive following on YouTube and also on Twitch. He has hopped on a plane and he is here today in our Boston studios to talk to you about how technology is changing your brain, your relationships, and your identity. And the fact is, technology is not going anywhere. So it's not a matter of getting rid of technology. That's just not even realistic. It's about you understanding why you need to get control of your relationship with it and what to do about it. And I tracked down Dr. K because I read his new book, and it has changed my relationship with technology. It has changed my habits with my phone. It's changed how I talk to my kids and my loved ones about it. And I absolutely cannot wait for him to open your mind and open your eyes to the reality of what is happening when you use it. Today, you're going to learn all about what technology is doing to your brain, how your technology use, particularly in the morning, is trashing your dopamine levels. You'll learn about the shocking impact that looking at your phone has on your attention span. You'll also learn how to tell whether or not you truly have a problem with technology, whether it's social media, your phone, gaming. You'll also understand why you don't want to do anything after spending time binging social media. He has tips for increasing your attention span, how to maximize dopamine. He's also going to give you the exact scripts that you can use when you want to talk to somebody you love whose use of the phone or video gaming is concerning you. And these are scripts that actually work so that they listen. I am so excited to be able to share this episode with you because I know it's going to change your life. It's going to change how you think about this very important topic, but it's also going to be a resource that you're going to want to share with everyone that you know and love. Alrighty, let's jump into this with Dr. K. I am so glad you're here with me today. It is always such an honor to spend some time together, and I really want to acknowledge you for choosing to listen to something that will help you create a better life. I mean, I just think it's really cool that you're taking time for yourself, and I just love spending that time with you. If you are a brand new listener to the Mel Robbins Podcast, welcome to the Mel Robbins Podcast family. I'm Mel Robbins. I'm on a mission to empower and inspire you with resources that will help you create a more meaningful life. I am so thrilled to be able to introduce you to the one and only Dr. Alok Kanojia. He also is known by millions of people online as Dr. K. Dr. K is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist specializing in modern mental health and the impact that technology is having on your brain. Now, Dr. K has a really impressive and diverse skill set, which was why I was so excited when he said, yes, I will come to Boston, Mel. Let's do this. First of all, he did his medical and psychiatric training at Harvard here in Boston. He has been studying integrative health for over 20 years. He was a researcher at Osher Research Center at the Harvard Medical School in Tufts, and he has designed resilience programs for Mass General Brigham. He is also the co-founder of Healthy Gamer, which is a huge mental health platform and training company with over 175 employees dedicated to helping people overcome addictions to technology. And they also train clinicians in Dr. K's methodology. His YouTube channel, Healthy Gamer GG, has over 2 million followers. And he's the author of the brand new best-selling book, How to Raise a Healthy Gamer. I cannot wait to dig in. Dr. K, thank you for jumping on a plane. Thank you for being here in Boston. I have been dying to talk to you, and I cannot wait to dig into all things just brain and neuroscience and gaming and addiction and what tech is doing to us. But I want to start by saying, could you tell the person that's listening right now what they might experience in terms of a change in their life if they really take to heart everything you're about to teach us today?
So I think the biggest thing that they're going to learn is how to stop letting technology shape you. So technology is shaping all of us, whether we like it or not. If you're using technology, it is shaping the way that you think. It is shaping the way that you perceive the world. It is shaping your sense of identity. It is shaping what you want, and all without your knowledge or consent. And so in order to turn yourself into the person that you want to be, you have to be aware of how technology is shaping you and counteract that influence. And then if you want it, if you want to be that way, then go for it. But all of this is happening without our knowledge or awareness. And so that's what we really need to change.
Oh my, now I'm really like in.
It's crazy. So, there are research studies on something called the attention marketplace.
Okay.
Which is like people have started to realize that your thoughts and your mind are a commodity to be bought and sold. So there are like research, there's research on something called neuroeconomics, which is like shaping things like purchasing behavior, what you want to buy. It's not even advertising. It's gone deeper than that because we're doing brain scans and stuff like that. And so like people are like literally studying and competing for your attention. So all of the big platforms are fighting for your attention because the more of your attention they get, the more money they make. The problem is it doesn't matter which platform wins. The one person who always loses is you because you don't have control of your attention.
Holy cow. I want to try to just extrapolate this for somebody who maybe has never thought about the way that technology is controlling your life and shaping you and mm-hmm. your brain and grabbing your attention. I think a lot of us are aware that there was a lot of science around the way a retail store is laid out. Like when you walk in, a lot of stores use fragrance. There's a lot of ways that things are displayed, all in order to get you to stay in the store longer and to get you to be feel enticed to buy something. And you're going to show us today how technology, and particularly a lot of the big social media platforms, are being actively designed to shape and control the way that you think, to shape and control how much time you're spending on it, and to grab your attention because they can sell you something and make money off of the amount of time that you are mindlessly giving to these platforms.
Absolutely. I mean, and the stories are wild. Like one thing just pops into my head. So people don't realize. So there is there are allegations that there's one stock trading app that, see, it used to be that if you wanted to buy or sell a stock, you had to sell it or buy it during like trading hours.
Mm-hmm.
But now you can buy or sell a stock 24 hours a day. And what we know about the human brain is the human brain gets fatigued the later on in the day that you go. This is why people have trouble with midnight snacking, because you run out of willpower at like 11 p.m., midnight, 1 a.m. And so now what happens is that you can buy stock at like 1 in the morning when you're not thinking clearly. This is the wild thing. So there was allegations that one trading house basically had a strategy of anyone who buys a stock at 1 a.m., we're going to take the opposite side of the bet because people are not thinking clearly. And so they made so much money by just taking the opposite side of the bet of anyone who is mentally fatigued and chooses to buy stock. So there's all kinds of stuff going on that people are just not even remotely aware of about technology and how it's shaping us. And it's scary.
You know, Dr. K, you've already mentioned this big word, neuroeconomics. One of the reasons why I was so excited that you were willing to fly here and spend some time with me today is because your work is this amazing just overlap of neuroscience and psychiatry. You also lecture at Harvard Medical School. You have a big practice. You are also looking at the effect of technology on the brain, and you have an incredible story for how you became fascinated with this and in helping us take control back. Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yeah. So, I was born here in the United States. And growing up, I used to play a lot of video games. So I didn't realize this until later, but I was 1 year ahead. So I skipped a grade.
Uh-huh.
And when in my school and in many schools, you know, your social status is based on your athletic ability.
Yes.
But I was like a 5-year-old competing against like 6-year-olds or 7-year-olds. So I was just getting crushed. And so the only way that I could compete with my peers was like through video games. So I started playing a lot of video games, really became a problem in high school. I was very addicted to video games. And so like played a bunch of games, basically failed out of college, would play for 16, 18, 20 hours a day. So I was on academic probation for after my freshman year for having less than a 2.0 GPA. So basically the best grade I got all semester was a C, and I got a couple of D's and F's. And so my parents tried kind of everything. They tried, you know, tough love. They tried supportive love. But they're both doctors. But even back then, I mean, today we know more. But back then, games were not nearly as addictive. And I was still so addicted. And they had no idea what to do. And most parents don't know what to do. It's incredibly frustrating for them. Like, they just don't know how to get their kid to stop. So, and then my dad finally was like, you got to go to India. And I was like, for what? And he's like, you just have to go. So I went to an ashram or monastery where I spent 3 months studying yoga and meditation, decided at the end of that summer when I was 21 to become a monk. That ultimately, I tried to take my vows. My teachers wouldn't have me right away. So
why?
So it's really fascinating. But one of them said, you know, I was like, I'm ready to give up my life. And he's like, what are you giving up? You have nothing worth giving up. So he said, he actually turned me down and he said, you can come back when you're 30, but you need to go back, finish your education, get a doctoral degree. And then if you still want to take your vows, you can take your vows when you're 30 years old. In the meantime, they were kind enough. So I basically visited every summer, stayed there every summer, learned like more advanced meditation techniques and things like that for about 7 years. And then after about 7 years, decided to give that up. My teachers were super wise. Met my wife. So the whole celibacy thing wasn't going to work out. was a struggle for a little while. But then ultimately decided to become a doctor, a medical doctor. And the big irony there was that, you know, I was pre-med, but I really didn't care about it. And then now I'd sort of decided that, okay, I was going to become a doctor. And that was actually part of my spiritual practice. So my teacher had also told me that anything that you do in the material world will be easier than what you have to do in the spiritual realm. So set a high target, and unless you can meet it, like, you're going to fail spiritually. So I was like, okay, fine. So I really took that to heart. Ended up going to medical school, became a psychiatrist, and I trained at Mass General, where I was faculty for a little while, and then started focusing on technology addiction. So when I was in residency, I went to some of my mentors, and these are, I mean, brilliant people, just leaders in the field of psychiatry. And I asked them, like, hey, what do y'all think about tech addiction, like video game addiction? This was back in 2015. I had my first conversation. And that's when I sort of realized, they were like, oh, you know, like, it seems like it's a problem, but we don't really know too much about it. That's changed a lot in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that's when it kind of hit me that, like, most of the leaders of fields, right? So if you look at medicine, like, the chief of psychiatry is going to be in their 50s, 60s, or 70s. And so it's no shortcoming on their part. They're amazing humans and have studied a lot, but, like, they just don't know what it's like to play a video game. And so I had struggled with this, started to get interested in it clinically, and then really started working with gamers. And then sort of expanded to social media and all these other challenges that people face, and really focused on combining, you know, I had some great training and people really taught me how to understand neuroscience, a lot of clinical experience in addiction, and then combining that with spirituality. And now what I try to do is help people develop healthy relationships with technology.
Well, I think that's really interesting way to look at it, because first of all, we don't understand how much technology is taking control of our brains and our lives, and we need to understand that. And then the second piece is, nobody's going to get rid of it completely. And so we got to understand how to have a healthy relationship with it. And I absolutely am going to dive deeper into more of the nuances around what to do when somebody is addicted to gaming or social media, how to talk to somebody who is, like, all of those specific things. But I kind of want to stay a little bit more broad.
Sure.
Because I think it's fascinating that back in 2015, you had the insight to say tech addiction is a thing. And so I'd be curious, Dr. K, what exactly is technology, modern technology, doing to our brains?
The short answer is a lot. So here's the first thing that we have to understand. So when we look at most addictions, we mm-hmm. tend to think about substance use disorders.
Yes.
So these are things like alcohol or opiates or marijuana. So this is a discrete biological chemical which travels to various parts of the brain and activates usually one kind of receptor. So we have the GABA receptor for alcohol. We have opioid receptors. And so it's a very targeted effect. The thing with technology is, if we look at the evolution of technology used to activate just one part of our brain. So originally with video games, you would activate the dopaminergic circuitry, which is what gives us pleasure. But then over time, people are adding more features to technology. So, you know, Facebook used to be a way to stay in touch with people, but then with the like button, you could get some social validation. It's not just about an advanced form of like, you know, a contact list. Now it's my identity is becoming virtual. My profession is becoming virtual. My relationships are becoming virtual. So like so many other parts of the brain are now being affected. It's basically like a whole brain effect at this point. It affects our sense of identity. It affects our sense of pleasure. It regulates our emotions. It alters our attention span. It does everything. And what people are basically discovering, what developers are discovering, is that the more of the brain that I can affect, the more people will engage with me, because now I'm not just activating this one circuit. Now you can use technology for everything and your whole brain can get into it.
Well, I think one takeaway so far, Dr. K, that's already super helpful is that even just the reference to Facebook, when it first launched on the scene, it was a way to stay in touch with people. It was like, clearly the Facebook from college. It was a way to share pictures with people, mm-hmm. a way to stay connected to your high school friends, to your first cousins, to your family members. And when you started to tick off all the ways that these platforms are now in our life, the like button makes it part of your identity. Do people like me? Do they not like me? The number of followers says something about you. It is a huge part of your professional life, like
Absolutely.
Being on LinkedIn or on Zoom, or if you are an entrepreneur or you're like trying to launch some sort of business, it becomes a marketing platform. Everybody's on these dating apps, which are basically social media networks as well. And so our lives have slowly started to become wildly intertwined
Beautifully
with the
said.
Technology. And this is why kind of our knee-jerk response is just delete the app. Oh, just do this. Oh, just stop playing the thing. And I think the genie's already out of the bottle
yeah.
on this.
I think so that's the challenge is that, I think it kind of dawned on me that like technology is kind of like introducing an invasive species in a new environment, where there's no natural checks and balances, and then the species just explodes. And technology is like an invasive species for our brain. So it starts to colonize different parts of our brain. And you'll see this if you've struggled with technology or you know someone who's struggling with technology, that's just always literally where their mind goes. It's what they think about when they wake up in the morning. You know, the first thing that we do is we pull out our phone, we browse Reddit or Instagram or whatever, right? It's the last thing that we do before we go to bed. We're thinking about it. If we're in the elevator, we're doing it. If we're sitting in a cab, we're doing it. If we're on the toilet, we're doing it. You know, so it's really invaded every corner of our life. It's really scary.
And, you know, I think that is a very interesting point, because if you're ever standing in line at any kind of store, look around. Everybody is filling that time by looking at their phone. And so, you know, you've focused a lot of your earlier career as a psychiatrist on gaming addiction, but mm-hmm. this is really about how it has invaded our brains and our lives in every single way. And so what I would be curious about is, as a Harvard-trained psychiatrist, when I look at somebody who is spending hours just filing through videos and surfing online, they look like they're numbing. Is that like a thing?
It's literally what's happening. And it's happening in both cases. So one of the, basically, a lot of studies show that one of the major effects on the brain is the suppression of our amygdala and our limbic system. So these are the negative emotional circuits of the brain. So if you kind of think about like, everyone's kind of hung up on dopamine, and dopamine's there, but I think a lot of the addictive qualities are about pushing the negativity away. So when you're scrolling on your short form platform of choice, doesn't matter, mm-hmm. TikTok, YouTube, whatever, what happens is if you're having a bad day and you start scrolling, like what happens?
You feel relaxed.
Yeah. I wouldn't even
I
say
do.
Yeah, so sometimes it can be relaxing. That,
okay.
I would say, is actually good. But oftentimes what it does is distract us from the negativity.
Oh.
So what happens is it is a relief from your anxiety, but I would not quite call it relaxing. It can be. Sometimes there is because I think about relaxation as a positive emotional thing,
That's
right?
True.
So what we really see is a lot of emotional numbing. And then what happens is we get stuck in this cycle, because when we use technology to suppress our emotions, our brain does not process emotions. So if you really like look at it, I mean, some of this is supported in science, some of it is just my conjecture, but human beings used to have a lot of idle time in our brains. So if you look at like for the majority of evolution, we did rote tasks. We do things like churn butter or like make rope, right? And if you think about that, like the mind is relatively free. So as I'm going throughout the day, something, I get worried about something, I go hunting with a buddy of mine, I miss my arrow, he hits his arrow, I feel inferior, we walk 2 hours back to camp. Over the course of that walking, my brain has time to process. Now what's happened is if you look at what goes on with our attention, we have zero idle time in the brain. And the problem is that chances are our brain has evolved to use that idle time. So we know, for example, even like with dreams, that the emotional content of dreams has to do with the emotional content of your life. And as we interfere with dreaming, as we have, you know, these different medications that will affect our sleep stages, the restfulness that we get changes. So our brain is actually, even when you're not thinking about something, your brain is doing a ton of work. But now what we've stopped doing is giving our brains time to process information, process emotions, because we're constantly externalizing our attention. And so the more that we externalize our attention, we reduce process times, emotional processing in the brain. As we reduce emotional processing in the brain, what do we see? A rise in just about every mental illness characteristic.
You know, Dr. K, as I'm sitting here listening to you, and I had asked you about, you know, sort of this numbing effect mm-hmm. that being on a short form platform or playing a video game is having on our brains. And I said, oh, well, it can be relaxing. Here's what I just realized in listening to you, that I definitely see that, you know, I've got this like busyness throughout the day. My brain is always engaged. Mm-hmm. I'm running from one thing to the next. And scrolling on social media is a lever that I pull to turn the busyness off. But what I'm, as I'm listening to you, I will be very honest, it's not relaxing. When I go outside for a walk and I don't have my phone on me, that is a very different state in my brain.
100%.
And so even calling it that I'm relaxing is me kind of succumbing to what's happening with tech addiction and the casual numbing that you're doing all day long.
All day long.
All day long.
All day long. So it's beautifully said. So this is where there's a difference between numbing our negativity and relaxing, right? And that's what technology is really good at. There are some times where you're on technology and you do get some positive, right? So if I'm watching like cat videos, like I can genuinely laugh, right? So it does release dopamine. There can be some amount of relaxation. And I'm not anti-technology, by the way. You know, I think it's just, we need to understand what effect it's having so that we can compensate.
Yes.
But absolutely, this is what we see is a lot of numbing that goes on. And then what happens is people, like, you'll notice that a lot of people who use technology have difficulty going to bed at night. Because once you stop the technology, what happens? There's a flood of mental activity. There's a flood of emotion. And then I have difficulty going to sleep. And since I'm not sleeping because my mind is running a mile a minute, what do? I pull out my phone. And once I pull out my phone, now my mind is relaxed a little bit, right? At least it's focused. It's not running in 1,000 different directions, solving 1,000 different problems that I can't actually solve right now anyway, because it's 10 p.m. at night. What am I going to do? So then I hop on my phone for half an hour and I wait till my exhaustion becomes so profound that it overcomes that emotional flooding before I go to bed.
Holy smokes. You just described every person that's listening.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Because I think we've all had that experience, and I will get a little bit later in our conversation. There's so many kind of foundational things I want to cover. I promise we will get to your recommendation for what the evening routine should look like. But I personally understand exactly what you're saying. You turn off you've shut the laptop down, you put your phone away, and there is that flooding of activity in your brain. And then it never fails. Calm yourself down by just scrolling back at your phone.
Absolutely, right? So I don't know if people are like this. I do this a lot where, like, even if I watch TV before bed, I will turn off the TV and then I'll pull out my phone.
Yes.
And then I'll even sometimes pull out my phone while I'm watching TV. And then it's like, well, hold on a second. What are we doing here? Like, what's the point of this? Am I trying to enjoy this show? Like, what's happening?
Well, Dr. K, what is happening? Like, what is happening in that moment? Because I do feel like there are so many of us that don't want to turn over 2 hours a night or more just to mindlessly scrolling. And, you know, we were talking with Professor Adam Alter, who was saying that we're going to spend 20 years of our life on our phone. And when we hear that and we go, we want to stop, but what's actually happening in your mind? Is this a sign that you're addicted?
Sure. So let's define a couple of terms.
Okay.
So the first is like, what do we mean by addiction? So generally speaking, when we use the clinical term of addiction, we're talking about something that impairs your function. Okay. So when we say that someone is an alcoholic, how do I know if I have a problem? Basically, if it is causing problems in your professional life, in your personal life, social life, mental health or physical health, that's when we really think about this is an addiction. So the challenge right now is that we absolutely have things that are addicting, which have not quite reached a threshold for many people of impairment of function. So everyone struggles with addiction to their phone, but they're not quite failing out of college, or they're not, you know, getting reprimanded at their job. They're able to have relationships. And that's what we're starting to see, is that technology is squeezing itself, because if there's actually like a really negative consequence, it's easier to stop. So there's all kinds of stuff that's going on. It's absolutely shaping our behavior and taking control away from us. And there are all kinds of like innovations that are designed to do that.
Like what?
So biometrics or Face ID. So if you look at this, like this is really important to understand. So when I was in college, this was like early 2000s, and I was studying, I would get distracted when I was reading a textbook. And my distraction would last maybe 2 minutes. And then since I didn't have a phone at the time, that distraction only cost me 2 minutes. Then my mind wanders away and then it focuses back on the task at hand. Right now, if you get distracted, it will cost you an hour. So all you have to do is catch that impulse. If you just look at your phone and you have Face ID enabled, boom. So when you have that impulse, app developers are reducing the barrier between impulse and action. And they know that once you look at one post, you're stuck for 45 minutes. You will scroll. So now what they're trying to do is figure out how can I, if this person has a single impulse, how can I get them to the first video? Because then we've got them hooked. The fish has taken the bait. They're on the line now. So that's where what we're seeing is that the price of an impulsive distraction is becoming way higher. So I think teenagers spend somewhere between 4 and 6 hours a day on their cell phone. It's crazy, right? And how
I would
do you
think
spend
even
so much,
more, honestly.
So how does that happen? It's because they hook you for a few minutes and then you lose an hour.
How do you know if you're addicted? And I say that because, you know, I can stand there as a parent, Dr. K, and look at my 25, 24, and 19-year-old, all of whom have their phones in their hands, all of whom are cranked down with their neck scrolling. And as I'm yelling, guys, get off your phone, I got my phone in my hand.
Absolutely. So in a weird way, I'd say it's the wrong question, because okay. I think we get caught up in whether we're addicted or not addicted.
Okay.
How do you know?
What's the right question?
Are you intentionally using technology in the way that you want to? That's the question, right? So at the end of your day or at the end of your week, if you look back and you look at all of your technology use, are you happy with how that's working? Are you like, man, I'm so glad that I spent 2 hours and 10 minutes scrolling on TikTok at 11 p.m. on a Thursday?
No, I'm not happy.
So the question is, do you want to change? Are you happy with your technology use, right? So we can answer the question, right? So if it impairs function, so if it's interfering with something, and fair enough, we'll talk about all those negative effects. So it is doing things like shortening our attention span. We're seeing a rise in the diagnosis of ADHD. So a lot of people, even if they don't have a diagnosis, they identify with having ADHD. And why is that? It's because technology does the attentional work for you. So this is where I know I'm going off
on a tangent. No, it's great.
So when I'm reading a textbook, I have to force my mind to pay attention, which means that I'm actually strengthening this capability in the mind. So the mind, whatever you stretch and whatever you exercise is what gets better, right? The more we practice focusing our attention, the better we will be at focusing. Now what happens is with things like short form content, they do all the hard work for you. Because if something doesn't hold your attention for 15 seconds, you scroll past it, right? So everyone is engineering content so that you are just like, you're sitting and someone else is driving. And so you don't have to focus on your phone. You don't have to force yourself to focus. It does all the focusing for you. So what started to happen with our attention is instead of taking the stairs, we're taking the elevator all the time. So we are deconditioning our minds, and then it becomes harder to focus.
Which is why you will stand in a grocery store line, and instead of just enjoying a moment where you're not doing anything, you have to look at your phone.
Absolutely.
Because your brain is being programmed and conditioned to need attention, to need something, to need stimulation. And it's happening to you in real time. If you're sitting here and you're contemplating the question, because you just said, don't ask if you're addicted, ask, Am I satisfied and happy with the way that I'm using technology?
That's the main question.
Dr. K, my head is spinning because as I'm listening to you, I'm not only learning about what I need to do, but there are about five people that come to mind immediately that I want to share this episode with, like right now. And so let's take a quick break so we can hear a word from our amazing sponsors. Because of their support, we can give you Dr. K at zero cost and all this life-changing information. And please, take a minute and share this. Share this with your kids. Share this with your partner. Share this with family members. Share this with absolutely everybody, because we all need to understand this and we need to know what to do about it. And don't go anywhere, because Dr. K and I are going to be waiting for you after a short break. There is so much more we're going to dig into and you're going to want to be here for it. So we'll see you then. Welcome back. It's your buddy, Mel. And you and I are here today with Dr. K. He is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist. He is known and loved by millions of followers online at HealthyGamerGG on YouTube. And we are digging into technology and its impact on your brain. What are some of your top habits or strategies, Dr. K, to take control of the amount of time you are spending on your phone or gaming or on social media?
Great question. So I think there's two approaches.
Okay.
So a lot of people will say just uninstall.
Yep.
Oftentimes people will have this experience where it's like, okay, I uninstalled YouTube and then I installed TikTok the next day, right? So like people will just swap out apps. So this is where what I've sort of found is that there are underlying drivers of behavior and then there are kind of environmental things.
Okay.
So let's talk about the environmental things first. The first thing that I would recommend is that you don't use your cell phone for the first, or any technology for the first hour when you wake up.
Okay.
Now, this is really important to understand. What a lot of people don't realize is that you have a certain capacity for pleasure and behavioral reinforcement when you wake up in the morning. You have only a certain number of units of pleasure and behavioral reinforcement.
Got it. So if I have a cup of capacity for both pleasure and behavioral reinforcement, you're saying that when you wake up, that one cup is already full?
So our dopaminergic circuitry in the brain, in this part called the nucleus accumbens, basically this is what gives us a sense of pleasure and also reinforces our behavior. So the problem with dopamine is we wake up in the morning and our dopaminergic stores are full. So what happens is we have a reserve of dopamine. And if you want something with delayed gratification and your dopamine stores are high, you can work a lot, but then when you get the payoff, since you have a bunch of dopamine, you get a strong dopamine release and then you feel really good. So the way that this works is like, I want y'all to think about this. Let's say I wake up first thing in the morning and then I work for 4 hours. And then what is the reward, the subjective reward that I feel after 4 hours of work? It's really positive.
Yeah.
Then if I use technology for 4 hours, it's kind of whatever. But if I use technology for the first 4 hours of the day, and then I try to go and do work.
You're not going to.
You're not going to. And even if you finish the same amount of work, you will not experience the same level of pleasure, because your dopamine has literally been depleted.
Got it.
So the way that I kind of describe this is, imagine that you have a lemon that is full of juice.
Yep.
So at the very beginning, when it's full of juice, a small squeeze gets you a lot of juice. But by the end, you have to squeeze a lot to get very little juice. This is how dopamine is in our brain.
So in other words, if you tap into technology and it invades your circuitry in your brain, it literally is like squeezing most of the juice out of the lemon first thing in the morning.
First thing in the morning.
And then that means it's also going to impact your ability to do the work or to focus or to feel joy and all those things that normally, if you did those things first, you'd feel a sense of reward and joy for.
Yes. So technology is like a hard squeeze. So if we use it first thing in the morning, we squeeze the lemon really hard and we get all the juice out. And then you have nothing left to feel good about because all of your dopamine stores have been depleted.
So is this also leading to this intense rise in what we're seeing and what so many experts have come on to talk about, which is this chronic feeling of being disconnected from yourself, this feeling of autopilot, this feeling of stress in your day-to-day life, that, you know, the fact that you are squeezing the juice from your brain first thing in the morning It leaves you with no reserves.
So all of those things are true, and each one has a separate neuroscientific mechanism.
Wow.
So let's do one at a time.
Sure.
I'm going to try to keep it concise. I think we can do that.
Okay.
So first, let's remember with the dopamine, the issue is that if you engage in a dopaminergic activity at the beginning of the day, you don't have as much dopamine to reinforce and feel pleasure for other activities. That's like just how it works, right?
Okay.
So we're emptying our lemon at the very beginning. So then working on your resume or finishing your resume, there's nothing left. So you don't reinforce the behavior.
Gotcha.
This is what gets people so confused about why they're not motivated. And even when they move in the right direction, their brain is not getting a positive reinforcement to repeat that behavior because the brain is empty. There's no pleasure left to feel. And that's what'll happen. If you are on technology for 8 hours a day, you start working at 4 p.m., you won't feel exhilarated by 8 p.m., even if you do the same amount of work.
Well, I think this happens even if you spend 10 to 15 minutes in the morning.
Yes, that's because technology is a vice of a squeeze, right? So you get a lot of juice. You empty your lemon very quickly with technology.
Okay.
Now let's talk about disconnection from the self.
Yes.
So this is fascinating. So if you look at disruptions in our sense of identity, what we know from studies on trauma is that when someone gets traumatized, there's this part of our brain called the corpus callosum, which connects our right hemisphere and our left hemisphere. And people who get traumatized will dissociate. So they will feel disconnected to themselves. What we know is that dissociation happens in part because there is a decreased connection between the right and left hemisphere. So our left brain is logical, our right brain is emotional. That's somewhat true, actually. And so what happens is we divorce our emotion from our logic. So when someone is being, let's say, like abused or something like that, they will feel emotionally numb through the whole experience. That is a defensive mechanism. So the emotions are overwhelming. So we're dispassionately, this negative thing is happening. I don't feel anything. So they feel numb. So anytime you numb your emotions, your sense of identity goes with it. So this is what's really interesting is you can look at studies of people who have gender identity difficulties and even autism spectrum. And it's been hypothesized that one of the reasons why people on the autism spectrum are much more likely to be non-binary is because they actually have less emotional connection to themselves. So our sense of self is formed by emotional experiences. So if I ask you, Mel, who are you? What would you say?
God, I don't know.
Tell me about yourself.
You're so smart. I'm embarrassed to like get the wrong answer. Tell me about myself.
I am a
56-year-old married woman with three adult kids.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite thing in the world to do is to empower and inspire people. I love learning. I'm a super positive person. I'm curious about how to squeeze the most juice from my life.
Great. So we can pause right there. So what I want you to pay attention to, and everyone who's listening, is the statements that you made are about your emotional experience. So you mentioned that you're married. Sure, it's demographic, but I would venture that your marriage is a strong emotional part of your life.
Oh, my relationship with Chris is the most important thing
in my life. So, and then you talk about curiosity, you talk about love. If we go further, we'll hear about trials and tribulations.
Yeah.
Right? So if you literally look at the way that your sense of identity is built, it's a string of emotional experiences. Like my story is failing out of college, addiction, going to India, rising in some ways to the top of my field, right? So these are all emotional experiences. Mm. So our sense of identity, literally, if you ask people, who are you? It's our emotional moments that matter. That when I went through that divorce, that made me who I am. When I survived cancer, that made me who I am. When I ordered chicken salad for the seventh day in the row, that didn't make me who I am. There's no emotion.
Yes, I get this. And so basically, you see, as a psychiatrist and an expert in gaming addiction, and that since tech and social media makes us numb, that is an experience lacking this emotional connection, which is what you need for a sense of identity.
Absolutely. When I work with these like gamers who, I'm 26. What have you been doing with your life? Well, since I was 18, I've been sitting at home playing video games. There's one element of emotion to that, which is I'm a loser. So that becomes their identity because they have no span of emotional experiences because the technology is literally numbing them out, right? And so once you don't have that emotional experience, like think about it. Like when your life is a haze, of technology use, you don't become a person.
Well, I think that's what most people are, honestly. Like, you wake up, you sleep with your phone, you look at your phone, you commute with your phone, you sit down at work, you're on Zoom, you're on email, you're constantly staring at a screen, you look at your phone when you leave, you sit at a table with your family, and half the people I see in restaurants are staring at their phones instead of talking to the people that are sitting there with them. You're sitting down in front of the TV, you're looking at a screen, you're also looking at your phone, you go to bed with your phone. Like, I feel like there's a massive, massive state of disconnection that people are feeling right now. They're not calling it that, but that's what I'm sensing profoundly in my bones.
Yes. So let's understand that, because you mentioned autopilot and identity. So now this is where autopilot comes in. So once I'm not connected with myself, what prompts my behavior? What prompts my motivation?
More numbing. Like the same thing. You're just sort of on this like...
Absolutely. So that's why we become autopilot. Why do we become autopilot?
Because there's no signals. I just got something. And then on top of it, because you need some level of force or some action to be able to take a different type of action, put the phone down, get outside and go for a walk, because you have allowed technology to invade your brain and squeeze all the dopamine juice out of your brain, you don't actually have that will within you.
Absolutely.
To take the action.
Perfect. Right? So what happens is we numb ourselves to our identity. And what is it that prompts us to do something with our lives? It is our sense of identity. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a good person. I want to empower other people. I want this. Right? So we lose connection with our internal self. So then what happens is normally what happens in a healthy identity is I have internal drivers and that gets balanced with the outside world. The world expects this of me. This is what I want to do. There's a healthy conflict there. Now what's going on is we are numbing ourselves to the internal. There is no internal anymore, which means we become autopilot. What does autopilot mean? This means that my actions, my behaviors, my desires, my goals are actually being conditioned in my mind. I watch this kind of social media. I think I need a thigh gap. I watch this kind of thing. I need to get this kind of thing. I need to have a side hustle, right? I need to do this now. So now what happens, and then we feel like we're not in control of our lives because we have all of these goals that social media is feeding us. And then we get super confused. Should I do this or should I do this or should I do this? The reason you're confused is because none of it is coming from you. One day, this person is telling you this thing. The next day, someone is telling you this thing. Everyone's saying, get this bag today. Use this supplement tomorrow. Right? And this is what autopilot means, because we are not driving anymore. We are being driven.
I love you. I can feel the person listening right now. Like literally either sitting in their car, or they've put the dishes down that they've loaded, or they've stepped off the treadmill at the gym and they're like, I don't want to do this to myself anymore. So Dr. K, now that we sort of see the implication and the fact that technology is moving faster than our brains can catch up, and it is now designed to put you in this state, because when you are in this state and you're on your phone all the time, other people are making money off of that attention. The longer that you stay on your phone, the more money people make. And when you understand this, you now have a choice about how you're going to use technology instead of being used by it.
Absolutely.
And I want to get into a couple like tactical things.
Sure.
So you just gave us all a massive wake-up call. And so here's what I want you to do as you're listening. There are people in your life that spend too much time on their phone. There are people in your life that you're really worried about. Please let Dr. K explain this to them. Let Dr. K do the heavy lifting. Let him explain to the people that you love why this matters so much. Because I think when you hear him talk about this, like, it makes you want to do something different. And so please take a moment, share this episode with the people in your life who really need to hear it, which is everybody. And don't go anywhere. There is so much more we're going to cover. We will be waiting for you after a very short break with our sponsors. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's your friend Mel. You and I are here today with Dr. K, and he has got my head spinning. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to share this information and this episode as a resource with people in your life. Now let's jump back into it. Dr. K, I have another question for you. what do I do right now?
Right now. So the first thing is that remove all of the things that make it easy for you to access your phone.
Like what?
So remove Face ID, remove biometrics. You have to use your little login, whatever, every single time. Make it hard for you to access.
Okay.
So what we want to do is increase the time between an impulse to use your phone and access to your phone.
Okay.
So practically what I'll also tell people is don't carry your phone around. I know it sounds crazy, but when I go home, I set it in a different room. I don't keep it near me.
Same.
So create space.
Okay.
Second thing is no access to addicting apps on your home screen. Go to the app section of your app, open up your whole panel of 800 apps and find it that way. Reduce access.
Okay.
So if you reduce access, there's a chance you can ride out the impulse. And what basically happens is anytime we give our brain instant gratification, it reinforces the behavior more. So you want to make it difficult for you to access. If you want to uninstall apps, go for it. So this is even stuff like you could save your logins in a browser, but don't have the native app. So if you really need to use the thing, use the web app and it's going to be annoying and frustrating. Yes, that's the point. So make it hard to access.
Okay. And by the way, I want you to consider that it's not just you're making it hard for you to access it. I want you to really absorb what Dr. K is saying. You want to make it hard for all of the social media apps to access you.
Well said. Brilliant. I knew you were going there, and that's exactly it, right? So what we want to do is, see, these apps are not designed to have you have a healthy relationship with them. They're designed to increase your unhealthy relationship with them. So whatever game they want to play, we want to try to tug of war in the opposite direction. So first thing is, remove your impulsive access to whatever the stuff is. So this is also where like I won't keep a lot of stuff on my phone. I'll keep it like logged into my desktop.
I like that idea a lot.
So here's another thing that I think will really get people insane. So I try to work minimally on my phone and try to almost never work on my phone at all. So there's a huge problem where everyone's like, okay, we're checking email on our phone. We're doing this. We're doing this. The problem is once you're in your phone, how many times do you just do work and don't do anything else?
Never.
So this creates a problem because now you have a good reason to be on your phone. But the good reason then turns into bad reason because it's easy to switch from your email to something like TikTok. So easy. So that's where like work is for work and fun is for fun and separate those two things.
Great.
Now, a lot of people will push back and they'll say, but I need my phone for work.
Right. I'm in real estate. I'm in this. I'm in that. I'm the other thing.
If you need it, then that's a different story. But oftentimes it is convenient is different. Like you can sit your ass at your computer and check your email like four times a day. And like you could probably be okay there. You don't need it.
Well, here's another thing you could do. If you truly have a job that you are tethered to your phone because people need to text you, email you and call you. Great. Have a work phone and don't have any social media apps on it.
Yes. You know, your spouse may be paranoid because now you've got two phones, but that's a separate bridge that we can get
to. Just don't put a password on it.
Yeah, fair
enough. They can look at any time they want.
So I think that's great, having a second phone. So we want to reduce our impulsive access to technology. That's kind of short term. Medium term is some of these other things. Like we want to be super careful about using it an hour after we wake up and an hour before bed.
Well, let's talk about that. Dr. K, what is your morning routine that you recommend if I really want to get control of my use of technology and not allow social media and all these apps and everything on it to get access to me? What is the morning routine that you would recommend?
What I would recommend is for the first hour, just no technology. So this starts with even things like an alarm where, so I'll sometimes set an alarm, but I tend to find that my biological clock, and this comes with meditation, you just wake up when you tell your mind when to wake up and it can wake up. But if you have to start with an alarm, that's fine. So one thing I would say is like, keep your phone like at distance from you.
Yep.
And then do, because here's the thing, we have a lot of stuff to do, right? That we never get around to. Just do all that stuff. Take out the trash, just wake up, make your cup of coffee, and then do whatever else you need to do. So I'll meditate in the morning, for example, for about 21 minutes. So I'll do all of that kind of stuff. And then like I'll shower and I'll get ready. And an hour gets eaten up very quickly. You'll also find that like your day starts way better, right? Because you don't waste that 28 minutes and then 12 minutes on the toilet and then 5 minutes here. So just start off trying to avoid using your phone.
So neurologically speaking, what will you likely experience if you take control of the first hour of your day and you do not let technology consume and enter your mind.
The enemy that you need to conquer is boredom. This is really important to understand. A lot of people don't understand what boredom is. Boredom is your brain's way of punishing you for not giving it dopamine. So we have to understand this.
What does that mean? I don't know what that means. It punishes you for...
Yes, 100%. So let's understand this. So if I'm addicted to opiates and I don't get opiates...
I have withdrawal.
And do you know what that withdrawal feels like? So we get hypersensitivity of our nociceptors, which is our pain receptors. So our brain and our body punish us. They say, hey, we need this stuff. I'm going to punish you as a signal to give me what I want. This is true of opiates. This is also true of calories and hydration. Hunger and thirst are negative experiences that are used to drive behavior. So our body punishes us all the time if we are not doing good things.
Okay.
Now, the problem is that this gets hijacked by things like Twinkies, where the hunger signal was evolved when we didn't have Twinkies, when we had like roots and tubers that we had to eat. And in the same way, boredom has all kinds of healthy reasons why we have it, but now it's gotten hijacked by technology. So when our brain is craving dopamine, it will make you feel bored. And your antidote to boredom is to give it what it needs. It's like it's jonesing for this, right? It's kind of crazy. So we have to understand that boredom is not like something to be avoided. Boredom is your brain's way of taking control of you. Because then, I'm bored. So what do?
You reach for your phone.
Absolutely, right? And then the brain is satisfied. It's like, yeah, thanks for giving me a hit of this. By the way, dumbass, you only did this for 15 minutes. And now you have this thought, I have stuff to do. So you close the phone and then your brain is like, I'm bored. I don't want to do that. Pull out the phone again. So the main thing that you have to tolerate is boredom. You don't have to conquer it. You just have to tolerate it, because eventually, if you don't give in to the thing, that signal will subside. So our brain has this principle of homeostasis where it never sends us signals forever. So even if you're hungry, right, you missed lunch, you feel hungry for a while, and then your brain acclimatizes to the signal. You stop feeling hungry for an hour or two, and then the brain reminds you again. Same thing will happen.
It's true.
So what we want to do with technology, we don't need to conquer anything. We need endurance. We need actually to lean into inaction. We don't have to be positive. We don't have to be motivated. We don't have to work on our resume. All we need to do is endurance. Just tolerate the negativity, tolerate the boredom. That's going to be your main enemy.
Okay, great. So put the phone out of reach, fill the first hour with all the kinds of things you can't get to. It'll go super fast. You will notice a boost in your mood.
No.
What are you going to notice?
No, you're going to suffer.
You're going to suffer?
Yes. At the beginning, you will suffer. So I'll give you just a great example. So if you're listening to this right now, no cell phones in the bathroom. Because what do you need your cell phone in the bathroom for?
I don't know.
It's the alleviation of boredom, right?
Like, that's true.
And it's like, do you really need stimulation for the 5 minutes that you're taking a dump in the morning? Like, can you not live without 5 minutes of looking at cat videos? Just leave it outside. And if you can't, you need to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and be like, this is insane.
That would be a sign that you got a problem and you need to get control of your relationship with technology.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right? Because there's nothing to lose, right? It's not like that's a productive time. Everyone thinks
it's very productive. I don't know what's happening in your bowels, but it's very productive.
Right? So we just let it go automatically and we stay there.
But I get your point, which is, I have a habit here when I'm at work. I leave my phone on my desk. It's not on my person.
Very good.
Right. Ever. And I've noticed my tolerance for being away from my phone is pretty big because I exercise this all the time. I don't sleep with it next to me. So that way I don't reach for it. I don't have it on my person the second that I'm done with work for the day and I'm down cooking in the kitchen.
So something beautiful. So at the beginning, it will be tough. Well said. So then something beautiful happens. So if I am craving Twinkies and I don't eat Twinkies, then my body will eventually be satisfied with a salad. Does that make sense?
It does, because I used to eat at McDonald's every day in high school. I freaking loved it. I love their shakes. I love dipping the fries in the chocolate shakes. I love the Big Mac. And then I don't know what happened. There wasn't a McDonald's where I went to college. And so I didn't have it. And then I stopped craving it. And I can't even think of why I would pull into a drive-thru. Like, it doesn't even occur to me.
So now we get to phase two, which is once you tolerate the boredom for a while. I don't know if you're familiar with this concept of shower thoughts, but a lot of people have very profound thoughts in the shower.
Yes.
And the question is why? The only reason is because this is the time where you are with yourself. It's the one last bastion that is protected from technology because water is damaging to technology. So it's the only time we're with ourselves. And when we are with ourselves, remember that the problem with technology is it numbs us out to ourselves. The other mechanism it uses is it literally externalizes my attention. So what my mind is thinking about is what I see, what I hear, instead of like what I feel.
Out there.
Yes.
Which is why the FOMO and the constant comparison is so amplified.
It's terrible.
Because technology has trained you to have an external focus. And if you're never allowing yourself to be alone with your own thoughts, alone with your own feelings, moments of boredom, idleness, stillness, to allow your mind to wander, to feel connected to yourself, of course you're going to think all the answers are out there.
Absolutely, right? So we have a huge problem of externalizing our attention. So if I take a human being and I stick him on an island for a day, and yes. I'm like, just like, there's food and stuff, right? Like, they'll be okay. Like, you can experience your life on a given day, and most people's lives are not that bad, thankfully. I mean, maybe they can be. But the moment that you externalize your attention, you are not paying attention to the positive and negative signals in here, then you lose touch with yourself. So after the boredom comes something super cool. So one of the things that I strongly recommend people do is if you're feeling bored, pace.
So, what do you mean? Like walk around?
Yes. So I do this all the time where when I take a break, I will pace, I will go for walks. And then what you'll notice is that there's this like flooding of mental activity. But if you do that throughout the day, that's your brain like processing.
So I actually dare you, as you're listening to Dr. K, to do this today.
Yeah.
I dare you to put your phone in your kitchen or in your car or somewhere off your person. And I dare you to simply literally either pace around or even better, go for a walk for 10 minutes. Yeah. And you will notice the flooding of the brain.
And yes, so there's all kinds of suppressed stuff that will come up.
Yeah.
It's not going to be productive at the beginning. But then over time, you will notice that your mind will settle down and you will feel calmer. So like when we give our brain idle time, it's kind of like sorting through the mail. Like we have all this mail that's piled up that we haven't dealt with. And we keep pushing it away, keep pushing it away, keep pushing it away. So your brain needs time for it.
Another question. Nighttime. What is your recommendation if, you know, we're listening, we're like, I have to do this. I often hear people say an hour beforehand, no screens. What do you recommend, Dr. K?
Yeah, so I don't recommend screens an hour before bed as well. So I think that's good.
Okay.
So that's where like, you know, we have to structure our environment. So like I will keep my phone usually not within like hand distance. You can like, and that to people, like an hour can feel like a really long time. But I find that if I just don't accompany if I don't let my phone accompany me, when I just do the things that I'm supposed to do, I'll even be on my computer. So sometimes I'll like, you know, look at like my schedule for the next day or things like that. But I try to use my computer a lot more than my phone.
Well, there's a very different experience.
Yes.
Like you're basically intaking versus
giving
your attention.
Yes. There's a boundary, right? So we don't want our phone to invade the other corners of our life. We want to have technology be where it belongs and not have it be anywhere else.
Okay. So you want me to, so I'm going to ask if you are someone who is worried about a person in your life that is playing video games or is on social media, but you know, your work really has focused on video games. How do you A, know it's a problem, especially if you have a kid or a partner whose social life is really about gaming and they're really good at it. So they feel good about themselves when they're doing. So how do you know it's a problem? And two, how do you help the person other than sending them this episode to listen to?
So oftentimes we all struggle with technology, but oftentimes we'll have people in our lives who struggle more than we do. And we can really see the impact in their lives. And the challenge that a lot of people face that you may face is that when you try to do something about it, you get pushback.
Yes.
Right. You can see it's a problem, but for whatever reason, they're like, their head is in the sand. They're in denial, whatever. So the first question is, how do you know if it's a problem? So if there's an impairment of function, it's impacting their professional career, their academic life, social life, which includes family relationships, mental health or physical health. That's usually what we're looking for the threshold of addiction.
Okay.
Second thing, though, is that I'd say, especially for parents or loved ones, trust your instinct. Because I think that the half the problem that we're facing in the world today is we're saying if it's an addiction, we should do something about it. And if it's not an addiction, then it's okay. That's absurd, right? So even if it isn't a problem, or even if their life isn't falling apart.
Well, you kind of know. You're like, my instinct, this is bothering me and I don't know what to do about it.
Yes. So I would say for most parents, I'll tell them, even if they're not addicted, I don't think that that's important. The main thing is trust your instinct. If you think it's a problem, right? And it could get better. And that's the thing is I don't want to set a standard that is, okay, your life isn't falling apart. There are so many people that I work with who have loved ones who are just like kind of stuck in neutral.
Yes.
They go to their 9-to-5 job. They're not really in really engaging relationships. You know, they'll go to birthday parties and stuff. They kind of show up for life, but they don't live life. So I don't like this emphasis on impairment of function and it being addiction for us to intervene. We should be living fulfilling lives. And if someone that you know is not living a fulfilling life, you should absolutely intervene.
And what is the opening line? Because it is human nature when somebody comes to you and says, I'm worried about you. Push back. I'm fine. Like, block it out. I'm not listening.
So we're going to give you a couple of opening lines that make assumptions. So the first thing is, hey, I'm concerned about your technology use. So just own what you're concerned about.
Okay.
Second line is, I'm sorry for judging you. And I recognize that I've been pushy without really understanding. And like, I'm going to take a step back. So acknowledge your concern, oftentimes apologize because this is not the first time you're having this conversation, right? Where you've tried to explain to them, convince them, whatever. So you want to open them up to it. And if you kind of open up by saying, hey, I'm sorry for judging you or whatever, that goes a long way in terms of their cognitive flexibility and their willingness to listen. Third thing is help me understand what you think about technology or whatever the thing is. So help me understand, like, can you just tell me about your social media use? Can you tell me a little bit? Help me understand. Because if we don't say that first line, let's like unpack a little bit. Oftentimes what people will do is they'll detect that I really have these views and you're not really just asking an open-ended question. They're going to feel like you're trying to trap them.
Right.
So you want to own that apology and own, like, I know I've been concerned in the past. I realize like I've been pushing you and that's not fair to you.
Right.
I'm sorry for that.
Thank you.
Help me understand.
Yeah.
You know, like, how do you see this? Because like, I see this and it's a problem to me, but like anytime I talk to you about it, it doesn't seem to go well. So help me understand. How do you feel about it? Right. And that's when they'll, sometimes they'll say, oh, you know, it's not a problem or something like that. And that's where we all also want to use the second technique. And we lay these out. There's a ton of sample dialogue in How to Raise a Healthy Gamer, which by the way, has been useful for not people who are parents, but just anyone who wants to have a conversation with someone about changing their behavior. So we see a lot of benefit from spouses. So we have a lot of husbands who game too much. I'm guilty of that. There's a lot of really useful conversations. Even people have used the book for conversations with their parents. So it's just a really solid set of evidence-based like conversational techniques.
Yeah.
And the next thing that we want to do is something called reflectively listen. So if we start with a question, but then I ask you, you say something, and then I ask you another question, I ask you another question. It's going to feel like an interrogation. So we don't want to do that. You start with one question, and then after whatever they say, oh, it's fine. Like, I don't think it's a problem. What you actually want to do is repeat back to them what they said. Meet them where they're at. And you could say, okay, that's totally fine. So I'm hearing you say that it's not a problem. So I guess the conversation is over.
And not then, really. You say that?
Yeah, sure. And then what do they say?
I don't know. I guess they would. Well, you know what? I'm thinking about how I would use this with my daughters and TikTok.
Yeah.
And I think if I were to say, what do you think about this? They'd probably say, I spend too much time on it.
Okay, right. So a couple of things. One is if someone doesn't want to have the conversation, you can acknowledge that and exit the conversation. The first thing that it'll do is it'll confuse them. So instead of going into this pattern of, right? And they're like, what just happened? I said I didn't want to talk about it and this person did not nag. This person did not push. Maybe this is different. So then you can say like, oh, so like, is it okay if I ask you like more questions about it or do you want this conversation to be over? And respect their space. And then if they say I want it to be over, then I would say one last thing, which is like, is it okay if I like just think about it a little bit and bring it up with you again? Now, if you're respecting their space, it's very hard to say, if you're saying, okay, I'm done talking. You want to be done? I'm done. Thank you for at least humoring me. Is it okay if I bring it up again? I've never heard a single person say, how dare you respect my boundaries?
Yes.
So we want to flip the way that we're approaching the conversation, really create space for them. And it works wonders because now they're confused. You've turned over a new leaf, which means through like empathic emotional mirroring, it will prompt them to turn over a new leaf.
I love this.
The best way to get your spouse to say, I'm sorry, is to say, I'm sorry first. No one wants to say, I'm sorry first, but it's very easy to say second. See, these are principles of human nature that we just ignore because we get so caught up with our egos. So you want to just say, hey, is it okay if we talk a little bit more about it? I'd like to understand more. And then whatever they say back, just reflect it back.
Dr. K, I am sitting here with my jaw on the floor because there were three major things that you said today that I will never forget that are going to change the way that I go about my day-to-day life. The first one is using that image of technology and the engineering and software development and app development as being invasive to your brain. And the fact that the addiction to technology that we are all struggling with right now is so different than any other addiction because it is activating so many different aspects of your brain and it is intertwined with so much of your life, and that the 99% of us have to figure out how to have a different relationship with technology.
Absolutely.
And so thinking about it that way elevated how imperative this is. Because the fact is, apps are not going anywhere. The software development and the sophistication of the way that apps and technology is designed to suck your attention from you is only going to increase, which means having a reality check with yourself now and realizing that this isn't about you resisting them. It's about you controlling the access
yes.
that apps and that technology platforms have to you. And when you realize that you actually are in control when you see it that way, but you have to take this seriously in terms of the impact on the brain. And you also kind of highlighted boredom in a way that I think is super important, because this little addiction and invasion in our minds takes over in a 5-second window of boredom.
Absolutely.
You're standing in the elevator, you look at your phone. You are feel the flood of activity in your brain, you look at your phone. And that's where you're going to battle this.
And there's so many downstream effects, right? Because right now the problem is 5 seconds of boredom costs you an hour.
Imagine so if you could invert that. You could get an hour back.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where everyone's like, oh, I don't have time for anything. Yeah, like, oh, that's because we spend an average of 4 to 6 hours a day on our cell phone, right?
Wow.
We're literally losing the best hours of our day. You have to work, you have to sleep, you have to eat, you have to shower, hopefully, boop, whatever. And then it's all the other time that makes us who we are, that allows us to connect with ourselves. We're forgetting ourselves. We're losing ourselves to this thing. Because when I get disconnected from myself, there's no internal driver. So I become a blank slate for external things to fill in my values. I should be doing this. I should be doing this. I hear the word should so much nowadays. What about what you want? Should comes from the outside. It's about what society wants from you. And then we struggle to do the things that we should do. Why? Because you don't want to do them. Operate from in here. Then you'll have a ton of motivation.
Yeah. And you can't operate from in here when you've handed everything over to what's in your hand.
Literally, the content of your mind is based on what is outside of you. It is not about what is within you.
So, Dr. K, speaking directly to the person listening, if there were one thing that you would want them to take away as an imperative, like something to do from this, other than forwarding this conversation to everybody that they know and love, because every person needs to hear exactly how you just framed this, what do you want the person listening to act on today?
The most important thing for them to do is nothing. So when it comes to technology, if you want to get control of your technology, what you need to learn how to do is nothing. Technology can only invade your life if you let it, by acting, by picking up the phone, by taking it to the bathroom, by pulling it out in the elevator. Do nothing. Get better at doing absolutely nothing. Pace. Sit. Get bored. We have this great exercise we do in our community that is transformative for about half of the people who do it, which is stare at a blank wall for 1 hour. Some people.
1 hour?
1 hour, absolutely. Oh my God, 1 hour. We spend 4 to 6 hours a day on our cell phone doing absolutely nothing. 1 hour. It's like shocking. Everyone's like, oh my God, 1 hour. That's even the junior version. The senior version is take a flight without any entertainment, without anything to distract your mind. Just take a flight and be bored for 6 hours. Go for it.
And what happens when somebody takes this invitation and just sits in a room and stares at a wall for an hour?
So some people will have catharsis. Like all kinds, they'll get bored for the first 15 minutes. Their mind will start to think about things. They'll sometimes engage with their thoughts. Sometimes people start crying. There's just so much suppressed emotion that everything starts coming up. Some people are just bored for an hour and their mind wanders and it's like not that big of a cathartic journey. But even then, that's a win because now you've tolerated boredom for an hour. You are increasing your resistance to boredom. It is your resistance to boredom that will allow you to resist technology. Because what does technology offer you? It offers you an instant relief of boredom.
What are your parting words, Dr. K?
The only reason we're losing this war is because we haven't been fighting it. So a lot of people will look at this and think, oh my God, like everything, we're saying it's going to get more invasive. Everything is getting worse. Everything is getting worse. But we haven't been concertedly fighting it. I'm not talking about regulation and Congress and like all that stuff is great. You should do that. But, you know, I'm a clinician. So my target is one person and how do I help this person? And what I found is once you start trying to fight this and you equip yourself with some knowledge of how it works, you will be amazed at how easy it is, actually. It'll be difficult for a while, but then you will get good at it. The problem is that we've been fighting this war with our blindfolds on. We don't know how our brains work. We don't know how technology, we don't know how any of this stuff works. So there's a lot of hope. And we just need to start fighting it in relatively the right way. You don't have to do it perfect. And you'll be amazed at how much things can cascade in the right direction.
I feel, Dr. K, this might be one of the most important conversations we have had ever on the Mel Robbins podcast, because it impacts absolutely every single human being. And you have so eloquently and visually painted the war we're actually fighting and why it matters. I cannot thank you enough for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I mean, I think it's high praise coming from such a high impact podcast where you guys have so much impactful stuff.
Well, this impacts absolutely. If you've got a phone in your hand, it is changing your brain and it is time to take control of this relationship with technology. Thank you for teaching us how and why.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And thank you for being here with us today. And in case no one else tells you, I wanted to tell you that I love you. I believe in you. And this really matters. I do not want this to be an episode that you kind of watch and then you forget. This really will change the rest of your life. It'll change your brain. It'll change how meaningful your life could be. If you struggle with putting yourself first, if you feel disconnected, this is actually the solution that you need to take first and take it seriously. Alrighty, I will talk to you in a few days. Okay, great. I got this. Okay. Okay. I love this.
They can watch the numbers.
I think that's awesome. That's really cute. Okay. Okay. What will you learn? What will you learn? You're right. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Understood. Okay. Got you. Got you. Sorry about that. Did you like that ending or do you want something?
No, that's what we want.
Oh, okay. Great. So good.
I don't have
okay. Great.
Yeah. Absolutely. So good.
Holy cow. Wow.
Oh, and one more thing. And no, this is not a blooper. This is the legal language. You know what the lawyers write and what I need to read to you. This podcast is presented solely for educational and entertainment purposes. I'm just your friend. I am not a licensed therapist, and this podcast is not intended as a substitute for the advice of a physician, professional coach, psychotherapist, or other qualified professional. Got it? Good. I'll see you in the next episode.
Stitcher.